Welcome to Nowhere to Run with Christopher White.
Chris in Tennessee, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Special edition of Nowhere to Run. If you're wondering what the criteria is to what makes an edition a special edition and what makes edition a regular edition, it's really your guess is as good as mine. I don't know. I usually have some kind of idea in my head of why that is, but this one is a special edition because I don't really even know if it's going to air on the podcast. I think I probably will. I might just send it to Frank. But basically, it's going to be just a response to Frank Lordy's podcast, the latest one, which was called Counterfeit Israel Part 1, The Star of David. And it is from his podcast, Wise as Serpents. And let's see what the date is on this. I don't know. It was probably somewhere around June 5th or something like that. I don't see the date on there on the website right now, but anyway, basically the premise of this one is, this one's just about the Star of David primarily, and showing that the Star of David that we see like on the flag of Israel is indeed, has nothing to do with Israel whatsoever, or biblical Israel rather, and is not any way in the Bible or insinuated in any kind of, even the Talmudic texts. It's a very late edition, a very pagan edition, and Frank does a wonderful job of showing how, a thorough job too, of showing exactly why and how that is. What the response is going to be about here is the subtle undertones throughout the podcast, and I think that I feel really impressed to put in my two cents on this, because I can see where it's going, and I think I just want to point out a few things that I may or may not be right about, but nevertheless I feel very strongly that it should be said. Let me just go ahead and clarify what it is that I'll be responding to, the idea, and that is that Frank was basically saying that, and pointing out rightly, that the government of Israel is secular, quite pagan. Some would say that it is run by the New World Order. The United Nations set it up through Zionism. You can point out a good deal of things like that, and could show all kinds of things about the government of Israel being very pagan. And his point is that it is essentially a counterfeit Israel, that it's not the real Israel of the Bible. I don't think he's saying that specifically. I think this is where I think the difference comes in. The point that Frank makes in association with this is correct, but it doesn't make it the other true, and that is that churchianity and the politics of America, this idea that Israel can do no wrong, is not even biblical. It's not even, the Abraham covenant says, those who bless thee I will bless, who curse thee I will curse, but that doesn't say anything about what a church should, do politically, or how the political views of America, or that Israel can do no wrong. I think that is, that's not the logical conclusion. Like many things that America or the churches do, it's just politics. It's not based on in the Bible any more than the Star of David is. So to say that that's wrong, that's the whole point. But to associate that with this Israel not somehow, because of that, not being the Israel, or not being having anything to do with the Bible or the, what's going on with the Bible, I think is well wrong, and I'll try to show a few reasons why that is. First of all, it's important to realize that God couldn't be any clearer that Israel acted like a whore all the time. I mean, what was it, Hosea, that he was saying, to go take a wife, a prostitute for a wife, because I'm going to use you as a symbol of Israel. And she is, of course, unfaithful, and it's actually God tells Hosea to go take her back as a wife, even though she's been unfaithful, and there's a lot of details in there. And it's also important to realize that God is doing the judging of Israel for their unfaithfulness. You know, that's God's deal to judge them, to scatter them, to, you know, put them in captivity, to do all the things that he does. He judges them for their disobedience according to their disobedience. But it doesn't mean that he doesn't continually take them back as a wife. He didn't ever say that Israel can do no wrong. That's the opposite of the Bible. And so, you know, God would even probably be the first to tell you, he's like, no, don't do whatever they say. They can't do any right, let alone do any wrong. It's like, don't just blindly follow them. He'd be the first to tell you, he's like, that's everything I was saying in the Bible. They're very disobedient, you know. And you go look at the book of like 2 Kings or whatever, and this is important because it's talking about the nations of Israel, the kings of Israel, which was Frank's point, saying that the government of Israel is run by the New World Order and, you know, and essentially satanic, you know, and following all these pagan practices. Well, I got to tell you, I mean, it's probably pretty bad right now, but just look at what these kings in, you know, before Josiah's day and Jeconiah or whatnot, I mean, they were sacrificing their kids to all manners of different gods. I mean, can you imagine the counsels those kings were taking? They were probably sorcerers of the worst kind. Probably in the entire cabinet was New World Order. You know, they were probably obelisks and altars and, you know, Josiah didn't even know when he was king. Nobody even knew that there was a law of God until they found it buried under the temple, and they're like, hey, we found this book, and he's like, read it to me, and he's like, oh, wow, hey, guess what, we're doing things really wrong. So Josiah went and basically crushed all the altars into dust and, you know, really, you know, was a good king. It was like the Second Kings and others are like that. It's like, okay, here, you got a bad king, a bad time, and then you got the good king and what he does. But if God abandoned his plan for Israel every time the government was New World Order, then there would have never been a Jesus, you know? There would have never been a plan at all if every time the kingdoms of Israel were taken over by evil people, then there wouldn't be anything unless God kept taking them back as a wife and putting them on the right track again. The symbolism is very evident, and this is so important. That it's like a symbol of what we are in a sense, and that is that we constantly sin against God, even though, you know, we, you know, it's like saying if you know, that saved by grace or something like that. I mean, God is doing what he's doing with Israel despite their disobedience to him. He is doing it to prove a point. He's using it as a symbol. The covenants that he made with Abraham, and I'm going to get into that a little bit in just a second and all the details here, but just the premise is very important. And so whatever reason it was that Israel got into the land or whatever, and I'm sure that it had very evil elements in there. Now, this is so important to realize, and I know Frank realizes this, and I don't mean to browbeat anybody, but this is the biggest thing. I mean, we're talking about the difference here between people and a government, which should be very evident here in America. We have been taken over by what I would say is probably the same group that has taken over in Israel. They are madmen. They are pagan, devil-worshipping madmen. And that's the difference between, let's say, the neocons, or let's call them even the ones above them that really have the reins of this country. The difference between them and like your average constitution loving Ron Paul American, how can they even be compared? The American government in no way reflects real Americans. In fact, real Americans are now the enemies of the American government, in the same way that Jewish government doesn't represent real, like, Judaism. And, in fact, religious Jews are the enemies of the new Jewish government. They have been usurped by an evil force. Now, that doesn't change the fact that kings do have authority over the nation, and they are subject to the king's ruling. It's just a covering, an order of things. Now, please don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying at all that we should be doing whatever Israel says. That's not biblical. That's not even logical. It's not politically sound. It's not anything. When the church says that and America says that, yeah, it's because they're wrong. I mean, it's a non-biblical ideology that has been forced on us for a reason. And that reason, the end result of it is to get hatred of the Jews in these last days. I'll try to walk you through how that's happening. That's why this is so important to me, because I've been meaning to do a show on this to point out this, because we're all getting psyoped. I'm going to just try to point this out to you really quick, because this is why I'm doing this. Okay, it's kind of evident by, I just saw this last, I was looking on the Michael Tesserian board, or whatever, the forum board, whatever it's called, MSAR. Anyway, they had posted a YouTube video of, like, Hillary and Obama speaking at this, like, Israel lobby, and they were basically fawning over the lobby, saying, you know, essentially, thank you, you know, we will do whatever Israel says kind of thing. And it was like a script, you know, it was the same kind of thing when Israel says, I mean, rather, Hillary Clinton said, you know, we must defend Israel at all costs, we must nuke Iran, all that stuff is a script. It's supposed to be said for two different groups of people to believe. And this is how this psychological operation works. For those, this is, now, to me, it's a done deal. We're going to go into Iran. It's going to cause, we are forcing people like China and Russia in on this Iran war. We're, as the Bible says, God is putting hooks in their jaws, I believe, for this Magog war. And they're going to drag them into this war. Now, the purpose for this war is to, it's got a lot of purposes. One of the main things is to create hate for Christianity and Judaism, and to a lesser extent Islam, because they want to make this be the crowning jewel of, look what religion has brought us. Because at the end of that war, they want to bring in a new order, a order that throws out all these silly ideas that we once had, and now a world government, yada yada yada. Okay? And more to the point, they want it to be specifically focused on, this is what Israel has brought us. And by doing something like getting, like, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, and for those to say that kind of thing, like, we will do whatever you say, Israel, that will do two things. First of all, it will make the patriot community types say, look, there it is, it's proof. Now, I take this into the context of, like, after we're already in a bloody war with Iran, and we're in a major serious battle, and everybody's dying, and stuff's happening on the continent of the USA, and everything's going to hell in a handbasket. We're going to be blaming Israel for this, because it will be, all we went in, we had to go to Iran because we had to protect Israel. And so, it's even the patriot community is, and especially even, they're going to be blaming Israel for this. Now, who would want that to happen? Anybody got any guesses? Could it be Satan? You know, I mean, what about, let me look at it from this point. Now, let's look at it from the churchianity point of view, who don't know anything. This became evident to me in this, I think it was about last year, maybe a little longer ago, when they had the Israel-Lebanon conflict. I believe that to be, it was a test of the emotional state of the world, of what would happen in an event like that. And what happened, if you remember, it died off just as quickly as it came, but there was like a little period there when Israel and Lebanon were in war. And during that time, I saw a spiritual, I could almost say, event happened to even the churches. People that were, like Frank was saying, you know, have this blind devotion to do whatever ever Israel says. Even the Joe Sixpack on the street, all of a sudden, hated Israel. It was in conjunction with a very hardcore campaign on the TV and everything. Everybody just abandoned this idea that Israel was good. Even the even the people on the news media that would normally do such a thing. And then the churches were all of a sudden saying that kind of thing too. It was like, Israel must be stopped. It's just like, and then it kind of left as soon as it came there. That is what you're going to expect in this last bit. Now check this out. Now this is so important. Now obviously seeing that on the Michael Tsarian board, it was obviously in a situation where, like, look, you know, they foam at the mouth in their hate for Israel. It's like, really, I've said this before of that board. It's like somebody keeps throwing bait at just ravenous dogs who just want so desperately to hate Jews and Christians. So they'll put something on there like, they're just inflammatory stuff against Christians and Jews, and then they just all, you know, rip at it and foaming at the mouth and everything. And that's a microcosm of what the world is going to be like. Now, it's going to be hard to explain. Now, it's going to be hard to explain to people in the midst of this fervor of hating Israel. You're going to be like, hey, no, wait. I mean, you got to explain so much. You have to explain to them that, okay, first of all, there is somebody, you know, in control of Israel and all this stuff. Like, you got to explain about this idea of Shep type Z, you know, and this false Messiah in 1666 that is erased from Jewish history. And also the Frankist, it was kind of a dual false Messiah kind of thing. And essentially, there is a group of Jews that believe the opposite of the Torah, that because Shabtai Z eventually was forced to convert to Islam under duress, that is, he was had a sword to his throat and he converted to Islam, and then basically a majority of his followers quit following him, but some saw that as a sign to later convert covertly to other religions and to secretly infiltrate as many things as you can, and then to use this philosophy, which they have the opposite of the Torah, which is like, believe that you should kill instead of thou shalt not kill, and they, you know, get married in order to have adultery. I mean, it's the opposite of the Torah kind of situation. And those people do, in fact, hate Jews, and they try to kill the religious Jews. And while the United Nations did set up Israel, they set up Israel in order to bring Jewish people into one place so they could kill them all at one time, so they can completely eliminate them. That's why Israel is completely surrounded by, like, what is it, 80,000 rockets? They could wipe Israel off the face of the map. And if this was a logical world, if God does not exist and his promise to defend Israel after they come back into the land, it is not real, then Israel is doomed. Israel will be no more very, very soon. So you got to realize it's a psychological operation to think that the United Nations is somehow created Israel for a good purpose. Those people hate Jewish people. Now, they're not all Sabbatean Jews, like the ones I was just mentioning, but they are different kinds of people. But you have to realize that the more doors you open to evil and Satan, the more that you hate Israel. I don't know why that is. It just is that way. And you hate Christians too. Go read Revelations 12 and just soak it in. And you see, that's what, you know, Satan's plan is. I mean, and you can see that it's something, I think, a truth that you can know in your heart. I think if you're a Christian, you have seen it before. You've seen people that illogically hate the idea, hate God, hate Christianity, and by default, the more and more they do something like open doors to the occult and stuff, it comes with the territory that you begin to hate Israel. I don't know why, but it is. And so my point is, they hate at those levels, at the kind of doors that they're opening up, probably to the point of absolute possession by demonic entities. They literally have in their minds created the state of Israel to bring them all into one place and to eliminate them all at one time. And it is evident, and the United Nations does not support Israel. They're very, in their actions, they are openly very, very, very supportive of all the enemies of Israel, financially and otherwise. The same thing with America. I know America says that George Bush is a Christian and that he supports Israel, and that Hillary Clinton says that she'll do whatever to support Israel. That is a psychological operation. They fund Israel's enemies. They arm them to the teeth. They do everything that they can to destroy the Jewish religious people of Israel. It is the whole thing. I think Barry Chomish is a good example of this. I really encourage you to go to Barry Chomish's website. I think it's called BarryChomishWebsite.com or something like BarryChomishWebsite.com or something like that. Download a lot of his audio. Listen to a lot of his interviews. This is a guy. He's not a religious Jew. He's just a guy that has researched a lot of stuff, and I really do think his information is very crucial to understanding this whole thing. But here's a guy that has seen the writing on the wall in that that Israel's about to be wiped off the map. I mean, there's no logical hope for it. These people are planning on destroying Israel. They have the ways, the means. And he's not a religious Jew, so he doesn't actually believe that God, I don't think, is going to protect Israel, evidenced by the fact that he moved out of Israel to, I think, Florida now. Because, I mean, he is seeing that if all logic stands, Israel will be no more very, very shortly. But here's the gig. God is still faithful. And if we believe the Bible is true, then it can't happen. Something is going to happen to prevent all these nations all around Israel from wiping it off the map and killing all those Jews. There is so much propaganda in the schools and the minds of Islamic people, and as evidenced by the American media and Patriot and otherwise media, and soon to be everybody else media. I mean, they're going to create, the whole world is going to go to war against Israel, and by default, Christianity, because of their support of Israel. And again, this is not about Israel can do no wrong. This has nothing to do about that. Israel can do wrong all the time. They are very wrong. They have, all through the Bible, it's the story of Israel doing wrong. I mean, it's the story of an adulterous wife who worships other gods constantly. I also want to point out that the whole thing that I guess is being used to determine that we need to, you know, I'm speaking of churches, need to follow political ideology of Israel is this passage of the Abrahamic covenant that says, those who bless thee I will bless, and those who curse thee I will curse. I just need to point out that that's not saying anything about what you should or shouldn't do. That's not a mandate. That's not a law. That's just stating the facts. That's saying, you know, if you want to avoid a curse, you could just not curse Israel. And there you go. I mean, you could basically be completely indifferent to Israel, and, you know, you won't get a curse that way, and you won't get a blessing either, but, I mean, you can just be indifferent. It's all the same, you know. That, according to that verse right there, that part of that covenant, there's no mandate whatsoever about what you, certainly not to, you know, and the Lord said that whatever happens with the different kings, you have to obey them and do whatever they say, or I'm going to be real mad at you. That is certainly very, very unbiblical. Let me read some stuff, because I know this is going to get into replacement theology, so I'm just going to read something that incorporates a lot of the Bible here, and I think that's what we need at this juncture. So I'm just going to read this verbatim, and it has a lot to do with things that we haven't already talked about, but and things that really don't have to do with this whole point, but I think it's just, it's a good aside in this whole thing, so let me do that. This comes from solagroup.org. I know nothing about this website or this organization. I know nothing about anything. This is just a result of a Google search, and I think that they said a lot of the stuff that I wanted to say for a while, pretty much here, in a pretty short discourse, so I think I'll just read it. It says, God's relationship with Israel. First of all, we must recognize that God has a special place in his heart for Israel and Jerusalem. In Deuteronomy 7, verse 6, we read, "For you are a holy people to the Lord your God, and the Lord your God has chosen you to be for his own possession out of all the peoples who are on the face of the earth." God calls Jerusalem the apple of his eye in Zechariah 2, verse 8, for a reason we know only to God, he chose Israel to be his people, to reflect his glory and to receive his blessing. And he chose Jerusalem as his dwelling place. It was God's eternal plan that Israel would be the conduit for his blessing and grace to spread to the entire world. God's relationship with Israel is based on covenants. The Old Testament speaks of several covenants that God made with his people, Israel. The foundation of these covenants is one made to Abraham, called the Abrahamic Covenant. Genesis 12 gives us the first encounter with this covenant. Now the Lord said to Abram, "Go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you. and I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great, and so shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Genesis 12, verses 1 through 3. Was this a contemporary covenant that one day would be set aside? No, the scripture clearly states that the covenant from God is everlasting in Genesis 17, verses 7 through 8. And it says, "And I will establish my covenant between me and thee and thy seed after thee and their generations for an everlasting covenant, to be a God unto thee and to thy seed after thee. And I will give unto thee and to thy seed after thee the land wherein thou art a stranger, all the land of Canaan, for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God." The Abrahamic covenant involves three elements: a land, a nation, and a blessing. These three aspects of this covenant are enlarged in subsequent covenants called the Palestinian or Land Covenant, the Davidic Covenant, and the New Covenant. These covenants are also stated to be eternal covenants. Over and over, God promised to give the promised land to Israel forever. Genesis 13:15, Exodus 32:13, Isaiah 60:21, Ezekiel 37:25. God promised David that one of his descendants would sit on his throne. God says that his throne will be established forever. 2 Samuel 7, verse 12 and 16, 1 Chronicles 17, 11 through 14, Psalms 89, 35 through 37, Isaiah 9, verses 6 and 7, and Luke 1, 32 through 33. And the covenant is called an everlasting covenant, Hebrews 13, 20. God has made it very clear what he intends to do. All of God's promises to Israel, which began with the Abrahamic covenant, will finally be fulfilled in a future kingdom, as God states through the prophet Ezekiel. "My servant David will be king over them, and they will all have one shepherd, and they will walk in my ordinances and keep my statutes and observe them, and they shall live on the land I gave to Jacob my servant, in which your fathers lived, and they will live on it, they and their sons and their sons' sons, forever. David, my servant, shall be their prince forever, and I will make a covenant of peace with them, and it will be an everlasting covenant with them, and I will place them and multiply them, and will set my sanctuary in their midst forever. My dwelling place will also be with them, and I will be their God, and they will be my people, and the nations will know that I am the Lord who sanctifies Israel with my sanctuary in their midst forever." Ezekiel 37:24-28. We must note that all of these covenants were with the nation of Israel. Even the new covenant is specifically stated to be with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah in Jeremiah 31:31. God never made a covenant with the church. Rather, the church now shares in the new covenant. The new covenant inaugurated by Jesus in the upper room with his disciples is the same new covenant spoken of in the book of Jeremiah, with the only covenant mentioned, and the only covenant mentioned by the New Testament. Paul, while speaking of the church's relationship to Israel, never says that the church has usurped Israel's place or replaced Israel as the covenant people of God. Rather, Paul speaks of us as being grafted in Romans 11, verse 17, or brought near in Ephesians 2, verse 13, descendants of Abraham, quote-unquote, by faith. Romans 4:16 says, quote-unquote, heirs of Abraham's promise. Galatians 3, verses 29, and as, quote, sharing in Israel's blessings. Romans 15:27, because of God's grace and his plan to extend his blessings to all peoples, we have been included with the Jews into the new covenant. Has God rejected his people? But, you may ask, didn't God reject the Jews because of their disobedience? I'm glad you asked. Some had asked this same question of the Apostle Paul, and his answer was unequivocal. "May it never be," he said in Romans 11, verse 1. Indeed, the 11th chapter of Romans is Paul's treatise on the role and future of Israel in God's plan of redemption. Rather than teaching replacement theology, the Apostle Paul reasserts what was clear teaching of the Old Testament. God is not through with Israel, and he has a grand plan for their future. And it says, to summarize Romans 11, Paul tells us that God has not finally rejected his people, Israel. Rather, because of their disobedience, God has given them a spirit of stupor, quote-unquote, a, quote, partial hardening, that they have been broken off from the root, but will be grafted in again. During this time of Israel's blindness, the gospel has gone to the Gentiles in order to make the Jews jealous. We Gentiles, the wild olive tree, have been grafted into the root of the natural olive tree, Israel. One of the fullness, quote-unquote, of the Gentiles has come in to salvation. Then, quote, all Israel will be saved, end quote. Regarding Israel, Paul states, for the gifts and calling of God are irrevocable. For the gifts and calling of God are irrevocable. He says that in Romans 11:29. That is, God's covenant with Israel in the Old Testament has not been revoked. Israel will inherit the blessings promised to them, and one day, in the future, they will be grafted back in, and all Israel will be saved, quote-unquote. All Israel will be saved, is what's in quotes. Paul is merely repeating what God has already said in the Old Testament. He has promised to never cast off Israel. It says, Thus says the Lord, who gives the sun for light by day, and fixed the order of the moon and the stars for light by night, who stirs up the sea so that its waves roar. The Lord of hosts is his name. If this fixed order departs from me, declares the Lord, speaking of the sun and the moon, if this fixed order departs from me, declares the Lord, then the offsprings of Israel also shall cease from being a nation before me forever. Thus says the Lord, if the heavens above can be measured, and are the foundations of the earth searched out below, then I will also cast off the offspring for Israel for all that they have done, declares the Lord, in Jeremiah 31, verse 35. I really like this passage in Jeremiah 31 because it's saying, you know, if you can look out your window and you see the sun, or if it's night, the moon and the stars, then you can be sure that he has not cast off the offspring of Israel for all that they have done. You know, if the sun's still there, he's still got a plan for Israel, you know? And if the moon's still there, you can be sure that he has not cast Israel off for all that they have done. He's saying that, yeah, they deserve it. Okay, stay with me. We're almost done here. I'll continue. It says, one of God's promises in the Old Testament was the restoration of the kingdom to Israel. He had allowed them to be conquered again and again because of their disobedience. But, consonant with the future national salvation, would come a restoration of their kingdom as well. Again, there are a multitude of verses that promises the restored everlasting kingdom. In Jeremiah 23, verse 5 and 6, Ezekiel 37, verse 24, 28, Daniel 2, verse 24, Amos 9, verses 11 and 15, Obed 17 and through 21, Zechariah 14, 9 through 17. The New Testament also reiterates the restoration of Israel's kingdom. When the angel Gabriel came to Mary and told her that she was to have a child by the Spirit of God coming upon her, he said of that child, he will be great, he will be called the Son of the Most High, and the Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and his kingdom will have no end. Luke 1, verses 32 and 33. What would these words have conveyed to Mary? Undoubtedly that her son would rule the nation of Israel, as her ancestor David did. Later in his ministry, Jesus promises his 12 disciples that in the regeneration, when the Son of Man will sit on his glorious throne, you also shall sit upon 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. Matthew 19, verse 28. What could this mean except a restoration of the kingdom to Israel? In his Olivet Discourse, recorded in Luke 21, Jesus spoke of the coming destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70 and the dispersion of the Jews. He said that they will fall by the edge of the sword, and they will be led captive into all nations, and Jerusalem will be trampled underfoot by the Gentiles. until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. Until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. Luke 21, verse 24. This is a prophecy of the destruction of Rome, of destruction by Rome, of literal Jerusalem, and its subsequent domination by the Gentile powers. However, a time limit is placed on this domination by the word until. Jesus says that one day the domination will end. What can this refer to but a restoration of Jerusalem to Jewish rule? And finally, after the resurrection of Christ, his disciples asked him a pressing question. Lord, is it at this time you are restoring the kingdom to Israel? It would have been simple for him to say, no, you don't understand. My kingdom is spiritual, not physical. But how did he answer his disciples? He said to them, it is not for you to know the times or epochs which the Father has fixed by his own authority. Acts 1, verses 6 and 7. Had they misunderstood? Hardly. Jesus in no way diminishes their hopes for a restored kingdom. Rather, he says that the restoration of the kingdom to Israel will come in God's own timing. Conclusion. The replacement theology does a disservice to the church, Israel, and the Word of God. The substitution of the church for Israel runs counter to the expectations of the prophets, the expectations of Jesus' disciples, and the clear teaching of both the Old and New Testaments. If God will not fulfill his promises to Israel, what guarantee do we have that he will fulfill his promises to the church? Has he rejected Israel, as Paul said? May it never be. Okay, look, I just read that. I know that Frank wasn't trying to prove replacement theology or anything. I don't know. Maybe he was. But the whole thing is this. I just read that because I knew it's going to come up with other people. This is a very controversial issue, so I know that I'm going to get a lot of different things on this and different viewpoints. But I do think that this is something we should discuss. Maybe we could have a roundtable discussion on Skype or something, get as many experts involved in this as possible. And all I know, me and Amos had talked about that when we were doing the interview with David Lowe, that maybe we should get everybody together and discuss this. So anyway, you can send me your email. It's chris@conspiracyclose.com. That's chris@conspiracyclose.com. You can go to the website, which is nowheretorun.podomatic.com, P-O-D-O-M-A-T-I-C, something like that. I probably got that wrong. Podomatic.com. And you can go to frankandchrisshow.com. I'm sure we might cover this in the next Frank and Chris show. And so we will see you guys there. You can join in on the live talk shoe forum. It opens the chat room opens 15 minutes before each show. You can go to either one of the websites and find out when the next scheduled show is. We'd love to see you there and hope to have you call in. So just check the websites frankandchrisshow.com or nowheretorun.podomatic.com. Hope to see you there. Later.